Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and give us some feedback. Also, the Bald-Faced Truth podcast, it's brought to you by Shoe Mill, my favorite shoe store with locations in Portland and Salem and online at shoemill.com. Shoe Mill, where we put the world at your feet.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth. BFFT. Live from the home studios presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with the bald-faced truth.
All right, we do a lot of interviews on this show, and you just heard a great one with Scott Barnes, the athletic director at Oregon State. And by great, I mean, like, sometimes the interview doesn't necessarily rely upon the subject being chatty and informative and entertaining. It sometimes relies upon just being an interview being revealing. I thought that was a revealing conversation with Scott Barnes, the AD at Oregon State. John Wilner of the San Jose Mercury News and Bay Area News Group joins the show frequently. He's the best at what he does. Nobody covers the Pac-12 like Wilner. I want to bring him on this show, and I want to have a very different kind of interview, very conversational. He's going to ask some questions. I'm going to ask some questions. If you have questions, you can call in, 503-417-7575, and you can ask them of both of us when it comes to the Pac-12. Wilner joining us now. Where are you, John Wilner? Where are you right now?
I'm in my bedroom, hoping the reception is good.
That's right. I forgot. I have that same issue at my house. Why don't you get a landline?
How are you?
I'm all right.
Questions. Here's one. How are you?
I'm good. I've been bothered for the first hour of this show in that I'm in the home studio. And I don't know how this happened. I have a giant fly that is in the studio. And so during my interview with Scott Barnes, I was swatting at the fly with my notepad, because I was trying to kill it. But, you know, when they're mid-flight, they're hard to get.
Yeah, you got to wait for it to slow down a little bit. That's tough.
Discombobulated.
How was Scott Barnes?
Programmed. He was programmed. I thought he was really good on things he expected to be asked about. He did have a couple of things I want to ask you about. But, they're talking about doing Research Stadium among this whole pandemic that's going on and everybody's worried about revenue. They're trying to, renovate that portion of the stadium, that half of the stadium, and they want to make it available to the rest of the campus. So they're drawing upon student fees and funding from the rest of the campus is what I gather, because they want to include everybody on it. But he also said it's in the best interest of college athletics that everybody starts college football at the same time. And he also says he's optimistic that they're going to play a full football season somehow in some way. Do you think both of those things are no-brainer slam dunks, or will the SEC have different ideas?
Yeah, I guess it depends on what he means by start the season, right? Does that mean when the players report back to school in the next month or 6 weeks? Does it mean when they start training camp officially? Does it mean when they play their first game? I mean, I think that I would be surprised if everybody starts training camp at the same time, frankly. Now, does it matter a whole lot if one, if the SEC is 4 or 5 days ahead of the Pac-12? I don't know how much that matters, maybe a little bit. You can't have one conference 2 or 3 weeks ahead. That would be, that would be a pretty big deal.
Oregon State is going to say goodbye to Ed Ray, who's done a lot of good things on campus. He's beloved on that campus, and they've grown that campus in a new way. And they're going to say hello to a new president who's incoming. And I find it interesting that F. King Alexander comes to Oregon State from LSU. He apparently told Scott Barnes in their first meeting that he's committed to athletics. Is this a good hire for the rest of the conference?
Gosh, my view is that any president or chancellor who is in, pro football, essentially pro athletics, is good, because there certainly have been plenty over the years that have kind of not really cared, and it matters. And I think that finally a lot of them are realizing that football impacts everything, and not only in your athletic department, but across your campus. And, it, you know, other conferences realized that long ago. The Pac-12, maybe not so much. You know, that name, don't you feel like anytime you say that name, you should hear the background music, the trumpets playing in the background? F. King Alexander, you know? Dun-dun-dun-dun.
F. King. I was wondering what Scott Barnes is going to call him. Does he call him Mr. Alexander? Does he call him F? Does he call him F. King? You know what I mean? It's like, yeah. What do you, that's your president. Like Ed Ray, I'll give Ed Ray this. You know, it's Dr. Ed Ray, Dr. Edward Ray. He corrected me very early on when I referred to him as Dr. Edward Ray. He said, just call me Ed Ray.
Yeah, you like to hear that. It's tough when you've got the first initial and the middle name both in use.
That speaks ego, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, but I mean, King, that alone right there, right? I mean, let's hope he does care, right? And let's hope he's coming in eyes wide open to the challenges that the conference has. You know, he certainly is used to football playing an outsized role in your campus existence. I think that's probably all good, and it's probably good for a place like Oregon State, right, which has got some resource, and you know, their resources, their budget issues are different than say the school a little bit down the road and some of the other schools, and any president who's going to be pushing football is great.
Yeah, and he comes from the defending college football playoff champion to a school that you know, is just striving to be legitimate in the conference. I find that interesting. I wonder when he walks into the room. Okay, you know the chancellors and the presidents at the other universities. They're all pro Olympic sports. They love tennis. They love women's basketball. Do you think he's going to look around and go, "Oh, this is different"?
I think he will. Yeah, he. I mean, the SEC is pretty good at some of those sports for sure, but I mean, there's no, that conference doesn't judge itself on how many NCAA championships it's got. It judges itself on, where, you know, football, even basketball and baseball are, you know, far secondary. So it'll be interesting. There's now, if you include Kirk Schultz at Washington State, who was at Kansas State, and if you include Robert Robbins at Arizona, who was at Mississippi, there's at least three presidents out of 12 that are, you know, kind of trace their roots to the Big 12 or the SEC, and that's good. Actually, it's more, because I think Ruth Watkins is from Kansas, so at least she's been in big-time basketball environment. So, you know, that's good. That percentage is slowly ticking up a little bit. You know, I think we may have another change at UCLA in the next year or two, and that potentially could be good. So we'll see. There's definitely a different dynamic at that level, I think, than there was 5 years ago.
Talking with John Wilner of the Bay Area News Group, San Jose Mercury News. Wilner, okay, let's look at this. Larry Scott, I thought he was coming off some rocky years. As you point out, there's been tremendous turnover among his bosses. I wonder, though, how this coronavirus pandemic plays in his favor. There's a shortage of revenue everywhere, and the presidents have bigger problems than maybe who the conference commissioner is. They're trying to figure out if they have revenue from their own students on campus. Is Larry Scott gonna skate here?
Well, I mean, his contract is up in 2 years, and I think under ideal situation, the presidents and chancellors would probably start discussing what they want to do there now or soon. That whole issue will probably be delayed till the fall or winter, I would think. You know, I know I've heard good feedback. You know, what the commissioner has done in the last 2 months, the conference office, in terms of really supporting the schools, providing feedback, kind of facilitating discussion. He's on the phone daily with the other commissioners from the Power Five. The response has been very good. Does that translate to what the presidents and chancellors want to do, you know, longer term? I don't know. They still have to decide if they want Larry Scott to lead their media rights negotiations in a few years. And those negotiations are probably now even more important because of the issues that, you know, the virus and what it's doing to budgets. So I think, I don't know if it has changed that long-term dynamic, but I know for sure in the short term, the feedback has been very positive.
All right. I got a survey from Oregon State last night as they're trying to figure out their fan base or their customer. And one of the questions they asked was, why do you not attend more Oregon State home football games? And they talked about things like the cost to attend, game start times, lack of hotel availability, parking, poor concessions, the product on the field, the stadium location, traffic and weather, and all of those things. But I kind of feel like it comes down to two things. Like, it's kickoff times and it's product on the field, right? Or am I not typical?
I think that's right. I mean, I hear from fans all the time about the football situation. And, I mean, especially in the fall. And, I mean, I hear from a lot of fans about this stuff. And invariably, the complaint is not the price of the tickets. I mean, it is. I can't remember the last time I heard anybody complaining about the price of the tickets. I don't know what Oregon State's offering, but my guess is it's for, you know, 3 or 4 hours of entertainment. It's probably a pretty darn good deal when you compare it to, you know, a movie, you know, a 90-minute movie or something like that, or dinner out. I think it's not just the time of the game. It's the fact that you don't know the time of the game until a week or two ahead, and that, you know, and then you got to factor in the nighttime situation, especially if you're driving from Portland and you're driving back to Portland. I mean, I would probably put, you know, I would probably put product on the field first, because if they were 10-2, right, that place would be packed, I'm assuming.
Right.
So product on the field one, and game time slash, you know, an announcement of game time is probably number two. I don't even know that the rest of those things are that big a deal. You ever hear somebody complaining about parking?
No.
Because,
no.
I mean, there's plenty of parking. You know?
Yeah.
That's the thing, is most of these schools are not packed, and parking is pretty easy. I mean, there's that – the Beavers have got that huge lot right at the stadium. I mean,
yep.
That's a good deal.
They've got advantages. I kind of think if, you know, you go back to the Dennis Erickson era, if they just win games and they're exciting – I think even the west side of the stadium would not even be a factor. Like, people would be like, it's got charm. It's like Matt Court and the Ducks when they were winning. Everybody's like, oh, they're an Elite Eight team. This, the old building has charm. And I think if they're bad, everybody's going, oh, the building sucks. It's old. It's outdated. But I also don't know if I'm typical of the normal fan, because I'm in the press box. The concessions don't matter to me. The restrooms don't matter to me. And I'm being asked about these things, and I'm trying to answer them going, okay, well, what would a fan say when this comes forth? The conference.
I mean, yeah,
go ahead.
And the thing is that so many, it's so different, right? I mean, because a lot of the fans, that not just Oregon State, but all the schools are relying on, are in their 40s and 50s and became ticket holders back when most of the games were 1 o'clock and you knew 6 months ahead when every game was going to be. And so that core fan base is having to adjust to the uncertainty. And that core fan base has got kids. And does that core fan base, you know, want those kids walking in Saturday night at whatever it is, 12:30, and getting home from Portland? That's, to me, that's a big deal.
John Wilner with us, San Jose Mercury News. Let's talk about the conference as a whole. I kind of feel like, you know, we've beaten the drum on USC needing to be good for this conference to be taken seriously. But Oregon, if there is a normal college football season, I think Oregon within the next 2 to 3 seasons is rattling around that playoff. I think Mario Cristobal's got it figured out. Is that enough? Are we making too much about USC needing to be good for the conference to be taken seriously?
You know, I don't necessarily think so, but the USC has got, I've always viewed it like this. USC's got the easiest path to the playoff from the standpoint of building the roster that you need to have, right? No, I mean, they by far have the recruiting advantages because of their history and tradition and because of where they are. Their recruiting advantages are leaps and bounds greater than any other school in the conference. So if you kind of start with a blank slate and say, all right, which program has the best chance to put the players on the field that can get them into the playoff, you know, 13-0, 12-1, it's USC. Now, if Oregon, I mean, the conference was doing pretty darn well a decade ago when Oregon was really good every year, and so was Stanford. You know, that was kind of a – people forget, you know, when they signed that $3 billion TV deal, that was coming off of Oregon being in the championship game, Stanford being in the Orange Bowl, and Pac-12 football was, you know, was relevant nationally. And – it's not really relevant nationally. Now, Oregon, if Oregon was good for a number of years in a row, that would help. It's just that SC's got the easiest path to being relevant. That's what I think. I mean, Washington could do it just like Oregon because the Huskies have got, you know, a little bit of national resonance. But it's still, to me, it's USC's got – you know, their formula is different than everybody else's because of where they are. I don't know. I mean, what do you think? You think that people in the South and East would take the Pac-12 seriously if Oregon is carrying the flag and SC is 5-7 and
maybe, I don't know. Maybe not until the playoff, but I kind of feel like what the Pac-12 needs is for not just to get a team in there, but to have Oregon or Washington or USC, whoever it is, win games in the playoff. And then all of a sudden, people will go, oh, like, you know, and win the damn thing. I mean, maybe that's what it's going to take. If it's not, because I worry that if we sit around as a conference, I say we because I'm looking at the whole conference, but if people on the West Coast are sitting around waiting for USC to get well, I'm looking at USC as like, historically and in the last 15 years, and I'm going, I just don't know how much I believe that they can get there.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's certainly legitimate given the current coaching staff, right? I mean, yeah. I'm with you. And the fact that they're not getting all the players that they used to get, there's no doubt. And it's been the conference only has one win in the playoff, right? There's been 6 years of a playoff.
Yep.
And Oregon's win over Florida State in the first year, that was the last time the Pac-12 won a playoff game. And it's, you know, what, 0-1 since then? You know, the Huskies, they were respectable against Alabama. You know, that was a reasonable game. But still, you go on, you know, five years without a win, it's tough. It's tough, and that's how everything's judged now, right? So look at the ACC. The Pac-12 is way better than the ACC, top to bottom. It's not even close. But the ACC's got one team that keeps getting the playoff and winning titles. And that kind of affects how you view the whole thing. And then you add on time zones and Pac-12 networks and not really being into the relevant Heisman race. All that kind of stuff also has an impact.
Talking with John Wilner of the Bay Area News Group. We got some questions with some people lined up. Let's take them. All right, we have Jeff in Portland who's going to start us off. Jeff, what's your question?
It's about Larry Scott. John was talking about how he's hearing good things. Has anybody asked Larry if he's going to continue his salary reduction 10%, which is only $50,000, past next month, which he said he would do for 3 months, where others are taking 10 and 20% cuts for a season? Is he getting good reports because he's talking daily with the other four commissioners, which is probably what he should be doing? or because he's been on Dan Patrick and now he's starting to hang with the big boys and he's getting some of the glow from that. I just have this basic fundamental distrust of the guy who lied through the winter to you, John, about everything that he did. It's hard for me to imagine this guy can change his stripes and be a leader. I mean, lead the conference, not just go through the motions of what he's supposed to do in the first place. And that's kind of long-winded, but it's hard for me to have trust with the guy.
Yeah, I think, that's a good question, Wilner. What do you think about that? And the fact that he took the pay cut through June, I saw that too, and I had other people in other conferences reach out to me and go, gosh, when you're making $5 or $6 million a year, you know, taking a $50,000 pay cut, you know, isn't really helping the bottom line. Do you think, Larry? What do you make of the question, first of all?
Well, I think that they are going to reassess in June if there's not going to be a football season and the revenue is going to take a big hit. I would be surprised if he doesn't extend his salary reduction through next year. I mean, I can assure you that he will be asked about that when we get, in the second half of June. So that we'll see what happens. But they were following the NCAA's model because Mark Emmert immediately announced a 20% cut for the rest of this year, calendar or a fiscal year. And I think that's kind of what they did. But yeah, I certainly plan to ask about that once we see how the fall is shaping up.
Got another question that's come in Portland. Jeff in Portland. Another Jeff. Jeff, what's your question?
Hey, John, it's more of a comment. I don't personally think that USC has an easy path to national relevancy. I honestly think that they have an uphill battle. I mean, they were 13-12 in the last two seasons. They've lost their last two bowl games that they've been to. They finished 54th. One spot behind Oregon State in recruiting rankings last year, and they have no coaching stability. Kids don't want to go to a program that don't know if their coach is going to get fired and they're going to go through three coaches in 4 years.
Yeah, I think, all right. I think
Mario Cristobal has built a family and a culture there, and they've been top 10 in recruiting the last two or three years.
Yeah, I'm of that same viewpoint. I'm kind of wondering, like, I talked to a lot of former athletes on this show, and I'll just use, Chris Miller, former quarterback, played in the NFL, went to Oregon. You know, he's taken a high school job at Franklin High School in Portland. I'm curious how many of those kids at Franklin know Chris Miller played in the NFL. And at what point, Wilner, do you think high school kids don't see USC the way you and I see USC? If this continues?
Well, if this continues, I mean, I think that they, when I'm talking about those high school kids, I mean, it's really about the Trinity League down there, which has got Sarah and Mater Dei and St. John Bosco. And it is by far the best high school league in the country. And those kids, a lot of them would love to go to SC.
Right.
Because they want to play in front of their families. They grew up with SC. They idolize Reggie Bush. You know, if you think about how bad SC's been, over the last however many years, and yet they were still pulling in top 10 recruiting classes until this past year, right? If they had the right guy in place, they would be rolling with recruiting. The problem has been the head coach. I mean, your caller's right. They have struggled. But I'm saying if they had the right guy in place, they wouldn't be struggling. They would be, they would be not having to lift a finger to get a lot of those guys. So it just kind of depends on who's in charge, I think.
What happened there? Because I thought they were going to make a change, and everybody was talking about Urban Meyer, and you put Urban Meyer at USC, and everybody goes, oh, 18 months later, you're in the playoff. I mean, what happened at USC? Was it turmoil in their president's office, or what happened?
You know, I think that the president, my understanding is that the president was never really high on Urban Meyer because of stuff that happened in Ohio State and, what he was going to want. And she basically just said, let's keep Clay Helton for one more year, and let's try to give him some support. And they've done that. It's really a fascinating experiment, actually. They have kept the head coach and made tons of changes everywhere else. Support staff changes, coaching staff changes. And they're hoping that basically strengthening the body, you know, you keep the head the same and you really strengthen the body and the end product is going to be better. It's a little bit of a fascinating experiment. And I don't know if it's going to work, but that's basically what they've done. I mean, just hiring Dante Williams away from Oregon is a great example of what they're trying to do. And it's already paying dividends. Their recruiting class for this, the current high school juniors is looking pretty good. And so we'll see if it translates to a really good season. But I think that that's what they decided to do. Let's give him one more year and let's do everything we can to give him a chance to succeed. And then, you know, reassess. Now, that didn't go over well with the fans, and it could backfire because if they're not very good, that's a whole nother year wasted. But that's basically what their president decided.
I watched Helton go off the field after Oregon beat him down there at the Coliseum, and I felt bad for him because I thought, gosh, if they fire him, you know, he goes off and he's going to have to start over and he'll land somewhere. But I also thought if they stick with him, that is a tough position to be in if you're a coach where you're given one more year. And I'm not surprised that, you know, you have some trouble recruiting amid that. How do you recruit amid that?
It's tough, right? I mean, then they couldn't. That's why they had such a terrible recruiting class, you know, with the class that signed in December and in February. That's why it was so terrible. Everybody thought he was going to get fired. So we'll see. I mean, they've got a lot of commitments now. Those commitments can easily turn into decommitments. And there's certainly a concern that, you know, it's like a Groundhog Day down there. I mean, I think that's kind of what's going on. He's almost on a series of one-year contracts. And it does make things very difficult. I mean, success starts at the top, right? And they have had many years of bad leadership from their athletic director position. They got a guy in there now that I think is pretty smart. We'll see what happens and what the president allows him to do. Certainly money's not really an issue. I just think that they're going to, you know, we'll see. They could end up going 8-4 again, and then what happens? Let's give him another year. It's like Groundhog Day. Groundhog Clay, I called it, you know. We'll see.
John Wilner, San Jose Mercury News. All right, I'm going to pepper you with like three quick questions before I cut you loose here.
I don't know that I answered your first caller's question about Larry Scott changing his stripe.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that we kind of got to that, but I don't want to forget. I think that the situation is so different now, you know, than a normal course of what a commissioner's got to do, that he's actually doing it properly. Now, does that mean he's changed long haul and some of the flaws that hurt the conference are permanently eliminated? I don't know. But for what the schools need right now, I've heard he's doing a pretty good job.
And I thought, too, remember when, you know, the governor in Oregon came out, Kate Brown came out and said, you know, essentially football probably not happening through September. And then Larry Scott came out and made the comment about that being premature. We're months away from that decision. I really felt like he probably had talked with Michael Schill, the president at Oregon, and talked maybe with Phil Knight and maybe with maybe Mario Cristobal. And he was just passing along. Like, he wasn't speaking for himself when he was quoted by ESPN as saying, hey, it's premature to come out. Because I don't think he crawls out on that limb without talking to Oregon.
No, well, he told me that he has spoken to every president, chancellor, individually in the, you know, since the shutdown started, whenever that was, late March. He talked to all of them individually about, you know, what do they think about football, what do they think about campus, and he got the impression that they were all committed to playing. And so I think that a lot of his public positioning in response to other reports and to questions from the media has been shaped by the conversations he's had, the private conversations he's had with the president.
I'm going to ask you three rapid fire questions. Does college football for the Pac-12 start at the same time, meaning kickoff week one, same time as the SEC in this upcoming season?
This is yes or no.
Yes or no. You can add two sentences if you want. You already blew the rapid fire part, so let's just go with it.
I'm like a COVID test. It's taking me a little bit while. And I'm probably going to give you a false positive. I would say, here's what I think. If I were going to bet on one outcome, I would say the Pac-12 season does start, but I'm not sure it's going to start with non-conference games yet. They may end up not playing non-conference games. That's kind of where I come down on this. But it's so hard to know. It changes so much, and there's so much time. This is the thing that I keep coming back to. It has basically been 2 months since the shutdown started. And you think about how much more we know and what everything's happened in 2 months. 2 months from now, the kids don't even have to be at training camp yet. So there's so much time. But I would say, it's going to start, and I'm not sure it's going to start with non-conference games, though. They may have to come up with plan B and just play conference.
My second question in my rapid-fire lightning round is, look, we talked about Michael Jordan a lot in the last few weeks because of the documentary. And who's the GOAT, right? Who's the greatest of all time? Who's the greatest college football player in the Pac-12 of all time, in your opinion? Who's number one?
Based on their college careers? Or just talent or an offense, defense? Give me the
It doesn't matter. Like, I say to you, who's the GOAT in Pac-12 college football? I mean, who's on the list, at least? Let's start with that. OJ at USC is probably on the list. You know, Elway at Stanford's probably on the list. Who else is on the list, who's the GOAT?
Well, I mean, I would say Elway would be probably my GOAT. But the best player that I have actually seen, like, since I started covering Pac-12 football and I've been living out west, the best player I've seen was Reggie Bush.
Amen.
Best player. Now, if you're going, GOAT, Kenny Easley was like three-time first-team All-American. Ronnie Lott, I mean, I think that, on the defensive side, it starts with those two guys probably. Maybe Junior Seau. Offensively, Elway, Bush. I guess OJ. It's tough.
I agree with Bush.
You could SC. I mean, you could just make a team of 22 SC guys and it'd be pretty damn good.
I think that Penei Sewell at Oregon is going to make an argument to have been the best player to ever come out of Oregon by the time he's done. But that's a discussion for
who's on that? Who's number one on that list right now?
Best college player. I mean, you got to go with. I think Dan Fouts is up there. You've got to look at. I think Marcus Mariota because he won a Heisman. I mean, it's hard to argue with that. Those guys are rattling around. But I look at Penei Sewell, and I just don't know if he's probably not going to be a Heisman finalist, but I think he, at the end, we might look back and go, he was the most dominant player to ever play at Oregon. And here's my third question for you in this lightning round.
I think Sewell will be, assuming he stays healthy, he will be thought of by next November as the best offensive lineman to come out of the conference since Jonathan Ogden. And Ogden finished up in 1995. Right, and that's a first ballot NFL Hall of Famer, and I think Sewell's that level.
My third question: what advice do you give to high school and college graduates who are coming out of school right now? John Wilner, spit some wisdom.
Coming out of school right now—that's a great question. I'm mostly thankful that I don't have to think about that with my own kids. Because it's a tough one. It is really tough. I guess my advice would be don't be afraid to do something different. Don't be afraid to take a gap year. Don't be afraid to, get a job volunteer. Well, I mean, it's so hard right now because you can't go volunteer to help those in need. You can't,
right.
You're so limited in what you can do. But, I mean, I certainly think that, it is – don't be afraid to go outside the box to the extent that you're allowed to, based on social distancing, right? I mean, it's, I don't know. It's tough.
No, I think that's great advice. Yeah, go ahead.
No, it's just, it's so unusual because you're so limited in what you can do outside the home, right? That's, I mean, I would tell, if it were any other circumstance, right, for a high school graduate that didn't involve a contagion, I would say go travel the world. But you can't do that really right now. So it kind of limits. By the way, my wife and I celebrated our anniversary a couple of weeks ago. And you know what we did? We watched the movie Contagion.
Happy anniversary, man.
Yeah. Had you ever seen that?
I have seen it years ago. I need to rewatch it.
Yes, you should. It is eerie. I had never seen it. I had no idea what it was, who was in it. I just figured it was about some contagion. But oh my goodness!
I think you're right on your advice.
I got sidetracked. Yeah.
I like that. I like advice. Travel the world and watch Contagion. No, I think your advice is great for the graduates because there aren't like a line of jobs out there right now. And I think what's waiting for a lot of people who graduate college right now is a lot of anxiety and a lot of. I think you got to have peace right now, knowing that you can't force it. It's not like you're going to put out 5,000 resumes and you're going to get all these great opportunities. I still think you should be trying to. There are still jobs out there and there are still some people who are hiring. You look for those sectors that are hiring. But I think, you know, we look at the unemployment rates and there's just a lot of qualified people who are out of work right now. And I think it's a great time to start your own thing or maybe get a little more education. I know I've got a friend who's going to go into an MBA program because he's saying, look, there's not a job for me. I might as well wait out the economy and get into a, you know, an MBA program. And by the way, my friend wanted to know, he's already been admitted to the MBA program at Portland State and Oregon State and USC. Does it matter if USC is only an online course because he wouldn't be in person? Does it matter? Would you pay the extra money to get that USC MBA? Or is an MBA an MBA?
Yeah, that's a great question, right? The value of the online courses these days, there's a lot of parents that don't think they're worth it, right? But if it's an MBA, it's, you know, 3 years from now, that's going to be, it's going to say USC MBA, and I assume they have a pretty good program. So
it's an extra $50K.
Oh man, it's tough. I mean,
that's
a tough call.
I say no, but I'm not somebody. I'm going to say no. I say get the Oregon State or the Portland State MBA, and not for the extra $50K. But that's me. I'm not hiring. Like I'm not somebody sitting in a job going, all right, I've got two resumes. One's from USC. One is from Oregon State or Portland State, and I don't know the difference in those degrees as somebody who would be making that decision. I look more at the person, and I go, all right, you got an MBA? Are you a winner in other ways? All right, you got the job. But, you know, again, that's probably not why I'm not in a position to hire people who have MBAs.
Well, and it's interesting. Like, when that person goes to apply for a job in a year or two and they're interviewing, you know, they could say, I got into USC, but I didn't go because it was online only. And how are the employers going to react to that component of it? Because they know that it's different. Online only is different. So maybe the fact that, you know, whoever it is got into SC would be enough. I don't know.
Yep.
It's just everything is unbelievable. You know, I was telling somebody, this is something that we would read about in the history books, and it's unfolding in real time. And it is just so hard to grasp that concept, right? I mean, it's like living through the Depression or living through World War II. For those who did it, we are living through something like that.
John Wilner, I appreciate you. Thank you for giving us so much of your time today.
Stay safe, my friend.
There he is, live via satellite. Happy anniversary to you and your wife as well.
Thank you very much.
All right, there he is. John Wilner. I told you it'd be different than any other discussion. Very conversational. I wanted to just kick things around. Sometimes I call Wilner or he calls me and we have these 30-minute conversations and I'm like, damn, that should have been...
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Baltimore...
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but...
If you want to listen to more of the Bald Faced Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Faced Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.